We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Courtside with Christy and Gabe right here on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network. I am Christy Winter Scott, joined as always by my guy, Gabe Ibrahim, and we are down to four. We started at 68, and now we have four, Gabe, and wow, did you get your bracket right?
No, well, I was going to bring up our bracket. I was going to bring up our bracket in just a second to tell everyone how we're doing, you know, because we're doing pretty well. We're doing pretty well, but it feels like, doesn't it feel like yesterday, like we were literally, like we were doing the Courtside podcast, Courtside after the second round.
Yes.
And that was like a week ago.
That was awesome, by the way.
Oh, it was so much fun. It was so much fun to do that in College Park. Yeah. But we got to do that. And now it's just like, boom, blink of an eye. I'm heading to Minnesota tomorrow, and then the season's going to be over on Sunday.
Oh, and my gosh.
Like, it went by in the blink of an eye. And we hope you're following us at Her Hoop Stats. We hope you're subscribed to our YouTube channel. Our Twitter names are going to pop up somewhere below us now because we covered all of it. We were in College Park. We had people at some of the at the first and second rounds. We had people at I was in Greensboro for the tournament. Me and Marissa Sisk were in Greensboro. We had a crew, like three people in Bridgeport, and then we had you, Christy, in Wichita. So we had you covered. I hope you're watching. But it's been a wild ride. Do you want to hear where our bracket is? Do you want to know?
I do. Let's start off with that, and then trickle down through it all.
Okay. Let me get like the actual. I wrote down that we are 56th in. Okay. Which isn't bad, because last year I was like 221st. I was like really close to being dead last among the pool. So we are 56 in a group of, let me get the
57. No, I'm just joking.
186.
Oh, okay, so
108. That's pretty good.
It's not bad.
That's pretty good. I'd say it's pretty good. I'm pretty proud of that. We have 910 points with a possible 1550 points remaining. Do you want to take a guess where our big miss was?
No, you got it. Just tell me.
It's the Indiana game that really killed us. Picking Indiana over UConn in the Sweet 16.
The first half was good, a 4-point game at half. And then that third quarter just really changed the entire game. So whatever the halftime talk was from Gino.
I think, and UConn's looked really good since that second half. So
They have.
I'm glad we got that NC State game. We'll talk more about the NC State game a little bit, but I'm glad it didn't happen because it was a little bit wishful thinking, and we got that really great NC State UConn game. But that was our big miss. The other one, which is my fault, we should have followed your intuition on Michigan. because I'm pretty sure you had Michigan going to the Elite Eight.
I did.
And I talked us out of it to take BYU over them. And I think BYU lost in the first round. So that one's my fault. That's on me.
That's all right. I mean,
I'll raise my hand. My bad.
You're forgiven.
So yeah, that killed us. And let's see. You also want to take Villanova over BYU in the first round, which would have given us a couple more points. But, you know, hey, we have three out of the four in the final four. We have South Carolina, Stanford, and Louisville. So,
yeah.
Hooray.
Yeah.
And I want to mention the top bracket is from Jeremy is Gross. They are atop the HHS pool. And, you know, Jeremy, I don't think you're gross, personally. I hope you're not gross.
Yeah, I don't either.
Your bracket's incredible. Your bracket's incredible. They have all four of the final four teams. So good for them.
Good job, bro.
So yeah, but you know, hey, look, I think we did pretty well, right, Christy? Like I'm pretty proud of this. This is good. This is so much better than what I did last year.
Yeah, it's so tough to predict and prognosticate, you know, and you try to factor in all the her hoop stats and all of everything, all the analytics. And then, you know, you can't account for injury, as we said at the beginning of all of this, when there were 68 teams. But when it comes down to it, I mean, we have seen it. It's the teams that can defend, right? But it's also the teams that can have consecutive offensive possessions where they execute and score. Like, we've seen great execution sometimes. Ball's not going in the basket. Mm-hmm. And those teams are not winning games. Free throws have taken teams out of this tournament too. I mean, just at an explosive rate. And it's almost shockingly so. I have not seen that be as much of an issue as I have this year. Teams that just haven't been able to maximize those possessions on the line. And it's always, I mean, as a team, you want to be shooting 75%. Mm-hmm. As a team, and I've seen some really low numbers on the line, and this is what you do, right? Then you're in the gym by yourself in the summer, don't you get up 500 free throws? Or was that just me? Or, you know, I was a stickler because I was terrible from the line, but I had to really, really work on it. So it was something I really put a lot of time into, and not that I was, you know, I think career-wise I was probably in the 70s or something like that, but I mean, it wasn't like I was shooting 95%. But I went from a terrible place with my free throws to get it to 70. So, I mean, there is a possibility for you when you put the work in to get better there. And I think kids need to really focus on that across the board, like all levels, all genders. I think we've really seen a drop off.
Oh yeah. I mean, well, so the one thing that I always think about, especially when we get to tournament time, that you brought up, I think at the beginning of last year, is like free throw shooting is a conditioning exercise.
It is.
You have to be conditioned. I love that because that's what's coming up, I think, at this time of year on both sides, like you mentioned, men's and women's. Like, it is, you have to be in shape. You have to be ready. You have to know like what your body is to hit those free throws. And I think, you know, like South Carolina did a really good job getting in shape for that time frame at the end of the game to hit those free throws. Aaliyah Boston in particular, you know, she completely redid her body in part to make sure that she was in shape to hit free throws at the end of the game. So I'm with you. I think it's been huge on both sides.
But Gabe, I also think, you know, for as much as it is physically, you know, to be in condition for those moments, man, it's a mental fight too. Like, you know, you have to put yourself in those situations mentally, like paint the picture. I think I was very good at creating stressful moments for myself, and, you know, and maybe over the top with it, but I think it really helped me when I got into the game. I mean, to flash it back, right? We were in the final, the regional final, Spokane region, my junior year at Texas, a gazillion people. I mean, I've told the story before a little bit, how it was packed in there on the free throw line with 12 seconds to go. And my mom thought I shot it too fast, like, because she knew my rhythm, my dribble, spin. Like, I did it all the time. But she said she thought I did it too fast. She thought I was going to miss it. But I made both my free throws. But it's because I was at the line in the gym by myself saying 12 seconds, packed crowd, focus on your mechanics and do the same thing. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were times that didn't work so well for me in high school. It happened my freshman year, missed free throws in a critical moment. And that's what drove me to get better from the line. And then that moment happened. So it's a process, but it's also, yes, you want to be physically in condition, but mentally you got to prepare too for those moments and be ready to attack and execute. And I think from the free throw line, it sounds so easy, but there is a lot to that. I mean, there's focus. There's, I mean, we've seen Elena Deladon, you know, the master of making her free throws with not a lot of, you know, different mechanics. It's a lift and flick and that's it. And, you know, she has just perfected it. But I think there's also a mental side of that conditioning that we don't talk about enough.
I still remember that she missed one free throw in the game five of the 2019. Yeah. I was like shocked. She was hurt and everything. She had the two herniated disc in her back, and it was still shocking to see her miss a free throw despite knowing that she was hurt.
Three of them.
Right. She missed multiple. It was just insane. Right. I mean, they still won the game.
No, three herniated discs.
Three herniated discs.
Yeah, I don't know how she did it with the knee and the mask and everything, but you know, she's superhero for that.
Incredible. Well, we'll talk more about Leanne Deladon. I also want to briefly give a shout out to my wife, Emily, who I've talked about on this. She like was a late entry, and like me and my friends have like a little bracket pool. And she like the 2 days before a tournament, she was like, "Hey, can I join?" And I was like, "Sure." And I texted all my guy friends like, "She's going to win. She beats me every single year. She beats me every single year in the men's side."
I love it.
Not because she watches that much more. She just is a North Carolina fan.
Oh well, see, she's in.
So this year she's picked North Carolina, Villanova, and Kansas in her final.
Good girl. Hey, Em, I'm telling you, whenever we do our dinner game, I'm going to go ahead and give her a pound on that. We're going to fist bump on that. That's pretty awesome.
She had Miami in the Sweet 16. She's incredible. It's an incredible bracket. And I told everyone it was going to happen. I was like, guys, I'm telling you, she's gonna win. If we put her in the group, she's going to win. And we put her in the group anyways.
So funny.
So shout to my wife.
Shout out.
All right. So that's a bracket update. I just wanted to, you know, let everyone know. And also, UConn fans, I know you guys were in our comments here on YouTube. Feel free to take shots at me. It is what it is. I was totally. Hey, no. Go ahead. Go crazy. I was going to come off. If I was right, I would have been insufferable. I want to let people know that if I was correct and Indiana beat UConn or NC State beat UConn, I would have been up here pounding my chest. So feel free to take aim at me in the comments, because I do deserve that one. I got to say, I had that one coming because, man, UConn was something special against NC State.
They were.
You want to talk about that game? Let's just talk about that game. I feel like
let's just go with that, because I mean, first of all, God. Flat out amazing. We had it on. I was in Wichita. We were about to have our game because it was the one before ours, and they had it up on the Jumbotron. So all the fans in the arena were living and dying on every pass, shot, free throw. We were just talking about free throws. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty cool just to, you know, have all of those fans also watching. They're probably on their phones watching, but wow, they had a Jumbotron, so they put their phones away. But just ridiculously amazing. And then that shot, oh my gosh, that sent it into the second overtime. And then Paige in the second half in the two overtimes. Come on, dudes. I mean, you can't write that one better. And I think Gino said as much, like, we should both get in to the Final Four. He hated that Wes Moore had to lose with his team because of the effort that they put in that game. And then Dorka Juhas gets hurt. I mean, there were so many dramatic moments, highs and lows in that game, just to digest and take in. It's tough to comprehend it all at once, I tell you that.
No, and you know, I feel really bad for Dorka. I mean, you know, she was clear hair. I was upset that they lingered on it so long, but regardless, you know, just hope all the best to her and hope she's all right. I think she said that she's coming back already this year, so she'll be back next year, I believe.
I am not sure on that, but I mean, it was just a gruesome situation. And I was just really sad. And she's a sweetheart of a girl. I mean, she was at Ohio State for a couple of seasons, so I got to know her, and just always engaging, always came over to the table, you know, just to say hello after practices and stuff like that. Just a sweet, kind young lady. So just all the best to Dorka on that.
Yeah, all the best to her. But man, I mean, the game was, I compared it to Avengers Infinity War on Twitter, because it was just like the narratives were perfect. It was like, you had, excellent play, right? You had the stars shining. You had Paige, you know, giving us a wonderful game, 15 points in overtime. She was perfect. She was 5 for 5 in overtime, 6 for 6 at the line, no turnovers, no fouls, literal perfection in the overtime when UConn needed her most. You had, bad calls that are going to be controversial forever. You had some questionable coaching decisions, which are also going to be talked about for a long time. And you just had the whole narrative was perfect. I thought, I felt so bad. I was going to feel so bad for whoever lost that game. I remember thinking, in OT, I was like, I just feel bad for whoever. Cause like, NC State to me, I love watching that team this year. Their seniors have worked so hard to build that program. Westmore has got it going finally
in
NC State. And they finally get over the hump, right? They win the double in the ACC with the tournament championship and the regular season championship for the first time since 84-85. They finally get past the Sweet 16, and it took everything they had against Notre Dame. Yeah. And then they get there and they're just so close, and it didn't happen for them. And on the other side, I was looking at UConn. I was like, these kids, they've worked so hard. They put everything out there. I felt bad for them. And I was just like, I felt so bad for whoever's going to lose that game. And Gina was right. It's a shame. It's a shame that someone had to lose.
Yeah, it's a shame. And, you were talking about execution and coaching decisions. I know Wes Moore said that he wished you could redo that last play over again and, get a better look. And we were watching that with bated breath, right, to see what they were going to come up with. And, they just didn't get the shot that they wanted. So he said he's going to have to sit and live with that for a long time. And as a coach, first of all, as a player, that's hard. But as a coach, I think it's even harder. And I think it's worse because, you want your kids to experience success and you're responsible for that experience. Mm-hmm. So I think it's 10 times worse as a coach in retrospect to know that, obviously he drew up that magnificent play to get the ball in the corner. So, there were plays that they executed perfectly. But that one just fell short, and they looked disjointed and disorganized on that particular play. And boy, if they had it back, I wonder what he would have gone to in his bag of tricks to execute something for a better look. So it was tough all the way around, just dramatic, like you said. But wow, Paige with a magnificent second half and overtime, AZFA had 19, like she was amazing. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just her shooting. She had some great assists and she was able to make good reads. She, the defense just went underneath on every action to her. She was able to, there was no help on the back end of that. She scored on a couple of those, but also dropped the dime to the weak side on a couple of those reads. So I thought AZ did a tremendous job of making the correct reads as a freshman on that stage and in that situation. And Paige only a sophomore. So these babies, are out there doing what they do, and super proud of them because I know them. But second of all, just super proud of the game. Like the women's game had, I think, 2 million eyes on that game or over that. And I just think it just serves everyone, it serves the next generation of players watching freshmen and sophomores and teams in general, just fight for it. And I think that improves the game as well, right? To see what it takes to win. So they're going to carry that to their AAU teams, their high school teams, hopefully South Lake's team. And then, it just motivates everyone to be better. And as coaches too, it motivates coaches to be better and to understand those moments and to be able to execute and to perform and be responsible, right? As a player and a coach in those moments. So just a lot of great stuff came out of that game.
No, yeah. And I want to add Kristen Williams to that list of players just because 21 points, not the best shooting night, but she stuck with it and she came up huge for her team. She's been a player who's been a huge part of this UConn program for a long time. I feel like she gets a little overlooked and it's not her fault. It's like she's on the team with stars that have risen above basketball to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. So, she kind of gets a little bit lower on the rung, but I thought she was incredible. I thought she was a huge reason they won. I thought on the other side, you got to give it up to Kunane, who had a nice game offensively. I talked a little bit about her defensive shortcomings, but The whole thing on the strategy too, like I see people like just going like, oh, they're slamming Wes for going under screens or for doing this or for doing that. And, you know, I said that I disagree with the idea of him hedging. You know, I kind of broke that down on tape for my own newsletter. But I get it. The choices are bad when you're playing UConn. It is a tough team to guard.
All of your choices are bad. Right.
All of the choices are bad. It's the same thing with South Carolina and pretty much all teams in Final Four. Your choices are bad. So it's like, are we going to stick? We got it. I think to a certain extent, like in the tournament, I think one of the most difficult things for coaches is deciding, do we stick with what we've done the majority of the year? Do we change things? How much can we change? I'm seeing things on scout. Here's my idea. Do we have time to implement it? If we try to implement it and we can't, this is going to screw it. So I think the coaching at this point in the season is extremely difficult. So I'm always like, you know, I get where the criticisms come from. I think a lot of them are fair. I just think that, you know, I think people have to understand, like, it is difficult to make those calls in this time of year.
No doubt about it. And I think you heard it. I mean, on the men's side with Coach K at Duke, he said, you know, we went to the zone and that saved us. But my guy said, hey, coach, can we go back to man to man? And he's like, all right. So there's a lot of trust, too. And it's not necessarily, it is always going to be what got you here, right? The basis of your progression and your philosophies is going to be what got you here is your defense and the way that you play it, whatever scheme you choose. But at the same time, you have to try to tweak a little bit here and there, just to make sure that you have the flexibility and the trust to move and advance in the tournament. So I think when you hear Coach K say something like that, like he's not going to, like what you just said, this is what got us here. We're going to stick with it no matter what. And I think he's coached for 40 years. So I think he understands that those kids are the ones that have to execute it. Those kids are the ones who, you know, are invested physically and mentally and getting the job done. So yes, the zone saved you for a couple of possessions, which is great. And I love that strategy. Love to do it myself. Like throw it in there, just see what they do and save us some possessions, you know, and then go back to, you know, what you need. But I think for him to say, sure, let's switch back. You know, I think that gave the players mental confidence. Right. To say, well, wow, he trusts us. He has confidence in us that we can go from what has been working well in an elimination game to come in and say, okay, I'll go with you guys on this. You guys just make it work, talk on defense, call the screens and get the job done. And I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for that as well. The trust factor is huge for coaches and players at this point of the season.
Well, and I think, you know, it's always interesting to think about like what comes first, right? Does the trust come first? Does success come first? Because it's good. Like when you're successful, it's easy to trust. When you lose, it's hard to trust, right? Because then you start questioning, right? Like NC State, I'm talking about the hedges and we're talking about, you know, should Diamond Johnson be in there, right? But it's like, if they won, all of it's gravy. All of it, we're not talking about all of the coaching mistakes that Gino made in that game, because he did. And he's a legendary coach, but he made mistakes. And I'm sure he would admit that he made mistakes. But we're not talking about it because it's a win. You know, life is a results-based industry.
Right.
So is basketball. So I just think I've always thought, like, what comes first? Is it the trust that comes first, or is it the success that comes first? I think we're at the point now where all of these teams are extremely together. You don't get to a Final Four without being together and trusting each other and understanding, like, what's going to happen in the highs and what's going to happen in the lows. And I think all four of these teams have weathered that this year. Even South Carolina, who's been incredible, number one team all season long, they've had to weather some lows, and they've had to look at themselves in the mirror and ask themselves, how much do we trust each other, how together are we? And they've remained focused, and I think that's true for all of the teams. But, you know, NC State UConn, absolutely the game of the tournament so far. I don't think that's a question, right? Like,
no, not even close. That's a legendary game. I mean, that's the game that we're going to go back to and examine and look at for a long time. And I think just those moments, and like you said, which comes first, the trust or the success? And I think it is the success. You know, I was just thinking about it while you were talking too, and I just think it's the success. And then, you know, we've done it before, let's do it again. And I think for South Carolina in particular, that's what we've seen, right? They didn't get the job done in the SEC tournament, lost to Kentucky in that game. So I think you know, they retooled themselves. They've gotten some shots to fall. Don Staley saying, you know, we know we're not going to make every shot. We know we've had some droughts offensively in games, but what remains the same is our staunch defensive attention to detail. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's gotten them back to the Final Four this season. And I think Aaliyah Boston coming up with, like, I don't know, double doubles, like, on a regular all throughout the tournament. I mean, the 28 and 22
28 and 22. I was there. I was there watching her. I was like, I don't think anybody in the world could stop her at the moment. Like, I was literally like, I don't think there's a player in the world that could stop her from getting her offense rebound right now. Oh,
just phenomenal, right? I mean, phenomenal. And, you know, next level player, obviously, in the WNBA. But for Aaliyah Boston to perform right now the way that she's performing, I think she's ready for a do-over, you know, from last year's Final Four. I think the entire team is hungry for that. But her in particular, I think she's playing at a different vibe. She's on a different frequency, and she's just tough. And then the board work. I mean, come on. Like you said, nobody's doing a good job of getting her off the glass. And I don't know who would be able to, who's remaining in the Final Four. Who can keep her off the glass?
Well, let's talk about that. Let's get right into our Louisville, South Carolina preview. I want to get your reactions from being in Wichita and seeing these teams up close. Sorry to Tennessee and South Dakota. We're not going to talk as much about you as you deserve, but we will someday. We will someday, because we have many episodes of this podcast. But let's preview this matchup. Let's start with South Carolina, like you were just saying. I mean, first off, there's not one player that can keep her off the boards. Perhaps there's a team that could do it. I don't know necessarily. It takes five people. And that was a theme with both North Carolina and Creighton. Both those teams are undersized, but even if you have one person that's big enough to kind of hold her at bay, five, you gotta get five people on the defensive glass when you're playing South Carolina. And like Creighton did, I'm telling you, Creighton did a really good job of that. And she still dominated because you couldn't. What are you going to do? There's only so much you could do to overcome a 4-inch height disparity between your tallest player and their tallest player. And that's the case for a lot of teams. So, I mean, she's just like on another plane of existence right now. Like there's no stopping her. In my opinion, there's no stopping her. Yeah. That being said, I'm a little concerned about their offense still, just a little bit. I came into this week, you know, very concerned about it. I talked about it a lot. And then they posted two straight games of 100 offensive rating. And, you know, they played well, but still doesn't feel quite right. Still feels like the spacing's a little off. They're still not hitting threes a ton, and that's affecting them. But I don't know. I just, at this point, I'm asking, like, does it matter? Does it matter if their offense isn't at peak performance?
I think so. Okay. I think so. And I think, you know, right now they've got to be at their best on both sides of the ball, right? And I know Don Staley said, hey, we're not going to make every shot. You don't need to make every shot, but you got to make the makeable shots, right? You got to knock them in. And the shot selection, I think, goes into that. And not that they're taking bad shots, but I'm saying you want to be taking the shots that you want to take, not the shots that the defense is forcing you to take.
Right.
Like, go ahead and take, we'll give you that. No, we don't want the crumbs of the offensive selection in terms of our shots. We want to take the shots we want to take. And of those shots, we want to knock the majority of those down. And I think they have to take advantage of where they have advantages. And I think it's inside, obviously, when they're playing Louisville, I think they have the size advantage, but so did Tennessee, right? Yeah. Tennessee has size advantage, but Olivia Cochran, she was magnificent on key, and she has the big black eye.
She has a souvenir.
Man, that thing was crucial. But so she's battle tested because of that. And all season long, she's been fantastic down in the paint, even giving up size, right? I just think sometimes it's about positioning. Sometimes it's about your footwork. Sometimes it's about your speed. And I think she possesses all of that. So she could be disruptive to Aaliyah Boston down there because of all three of those factors, but it's got to be a collective effort. Like you were saying, you know, in terms of the rebounding, in terms of, you know, clogging the space of Leah Boston. So she can't turn. Mm-hmm. And if she does turn, she can, you know, create a charge. You know, there's got to be some kind of, I guess, a tornado effect when it comes to surrounding her with a lot of attention. And because they're not hitting the threes, I mean, when Henny knocked in that one three, it was like, okay, you know, that gives Boston some relief, you know, and then now you can go back downstairs and get her some touches, but they've got to be able to knock those shots down because you know she's going to draw a crowd, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe it doesn't have to be a three. Maybe it can be, you know, a scramble to the closeout for a three and Henny gets by somebody, right? And pulls up for a mid-range. Yeah. So maybe they can look to that mid-range area, you know, since their threes aren't falling, but there's always a way to find a way to score. There's always a way. And it is, you got to calculate it. And you have to look at what your percentages are, obviously, and who's doing best, who's in a great flow and rhythm. But it doesn't always have to be inside or outside. Like when I say inside, it's in the restricted area of the paint or outside the three line. Like we don't need, you know, those two as being the determining factors. The two, like let's not forget the mid-range game. So I think, I don't know, you know, Dawn Staley, she's a tremendous coach, obviously. I'm getting back to consecutive Final Fours. But I think, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, you got to make your threes. It doesn't have to be that for South Carolina, but it does have to be cognizant of getting in the eye view of Aaliyah Boston when she gets the ball and she gets crowded with 2.5 kids on her.
Yeah.
Like somebody's got to move. Somebody's got to take a dive cut from the foul line and get to the opposite side. That's going to be there. There are other opportunities for other players on South Carolina to score the ball. But it's got to be quick reads and reactions. It's got to be, especially against a team like Louisville, who is excellent on the defensive end and making reads. They did a tremendous job on Naz Hillman. Mm-hmm. You know, I just remember her being crowded with the ball. And a couple times there were some slips on the opposite side for Emily Kaiser for Michigan to get some buckets because of it. So if South Carolina can move and shake off the ball, you know, especially when Boston gets it, they'll be better served. They'll be better served.
Yeah, and they have struggled with that a little bit, especially in the Miami game. They just didn't.
Yeah.
You're right. Like they were just stagnant, kind of on the outside. And you know, I think to a certain extent, though, like I think South Carolina would like mid rangers. Zia Cook can bury mid rangers. This year's been extremely tough for Zia Cook, and she actually had a nice game against North Carolina. It's not even close to her best game. It's just been such a struggle. It's just been such a struggle this year. And I, you know, that's a player that I just want to see break out because she's such a great player. And, you know, you could see the work and the focus that she has. But, you know, right now it's the shots not falling. Right. So you kind of have to live with it. But one thing that's been a struggle for her is like teams are, again, especially Miami, you know, they're packing in that 2-3 zone right at the elbow. Their guards are at the elbows. And then their wings are like right almost in the lane, not even like getting out to the corners. So it's like someone needs to hit one or two of those to start. And I think they did that against North Carolina. They hit the early threes. It's not necessarily hitting all the threes. It's hitting early ones just to like you're saying, like release the pressure a little bit.
She needs that.
And I think she does. But again, I'm not kidding. Like, they may just not need it. It may just be like, okay, hey, y'all can put 18 people in the paint and it doesn't matter because Boston's getting this rebound. She's putting it back up and she does a great job. And one thing that would have like any other big that's left in this tournament, when you're talking about, you know, when they have two people on her on the boards, it's like one thing that Haley Van Lith is excellent at is coming around and poking the ball, but Leah Boston, that ball doesn't come down. She keeps it up high. Yeah. And it's just like, she's so just perfect. Like it's just like every little thing. It's the little things, right? It's the little things that add up to this superstar. You know, the footwork is there. She keeps the ball high on rebounds. Mm-hmm. You watch her in practice. Like we got to see her first 15 minutes of practice. They're doing layup lines and she's talking. You know, you don't see that. I don't see that from other teams. She's talking to her teammates saying, hey, good job. Hey, go left. Hey, we're doing wheat. Like that every little thing she does well. I think she's just she's beyond any player we've seen this season. No shade to anybody else. She's just in a tier by herself above the rest of the country at the moment. I still think they can lose. I'm not trying to say they can't lose. I'm just saying at the moment they are so locked in. I think with that much talent, being locked in is the hardest and biggest task, right?
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, Aaliyah Boston is just so smart. I mean, she's just smart yes. with what she knows when and where to attack. And that's not just when she has the ball, but what crevice to attack when her teammate shoots the ball to get to the offensive boards, right? I think she has just developed in such a way from freshman year to now in that regard, just the win to attack. I mean, we know that she knows how to, right? But now I think what has really been fun to watch is when she attacks, how she attacks, and the wisdom that she brings to it. And when you have a vocal post player, I think that really helps. I mean, we love guards, and I'm not just saying that because I was a post, but I think it really does help because you see the floor in a different way from the post position, right? Mm-hmm. You see different things. And I think when you have that kind of leadership, that vocal leadership coming from a player like Aaliyah Boston, like you were saying in the practices, I bet that was fun to see her step up into that kind of role. It doesn't always have to be the guards who are the leaders. Like, if you're a leader, you're a leader, regardless of how tall you are, regardless of your position on the floor, lead, right? So she possesses that quality. And I think that's what's carried South Carolina as well. So I just think they have all the pieces, but again, they just need to be consistent on the offensive end. You know what they're going to bring on the defensive side. But man, don't count out this Louisville team because they are a buzzsaw when it comes to constant energy on the defensive end. I mean, Emily Engstler. I mean, can we just talk about her for a second? Because she did not score the ball well in their last game against Michigan. She had less than 6 points. I know she got a couple on the free throw line, but I was running at the end, so I don't know what she ended up with. I think 5 or 6 points she ended up with. But she had 16 rebounds, Gabe. And so we're talking about, you know, the motor that Aaliyah Boston has on the glass. Emily Engstler has it too. And she's 6'2", put in the body work. You know, when she left Syracuse, she lost 50 pounds. Yeah. And another player who has been dedicated to, like you said, the conditioning portion of this. And I just think she is just all over the place. Deflections, blocks, steals, and her ability to rebound. And I don't know, her energy is just nonstop. And if she's not scoring the ball, she didn't shoot the ball well, but she's not sulking about it. She's like, hey man, I'm not making shots, but guess what I am going to do? I'm going to get this block. Guess what I am going to do? I'm going to get 16 rebounds, right? There's always something that she can find to do to impact the game. And I think, you know, she's going to be a problem for South Carolina too. I mean, they've got to guard them as well. Okay. So just with the way that she plays and Haley Van Lith, I mean, 20 points in every single NCAA game this year. I mean, at the beginning of the year, what did she start? 1 for 19, 1 for 17, 1 for 19.
She could buy a bucket.
Couldn't score. But she was the one you're talking about practices. I mean, the practice on the dark day in between the two games. Mm-hmm. And you know, she stayed after and was shooting around with Sam Purcell. Congrats to him going to Mississippi State as the head coach, but he's sticking with this Louisville squad, but he's rebounding for her and she's knocking in three after three after three after three. And I'm like, you know, that's what it takes, you know. And there's a game the next day and she's grinding it out and hitting every spot going around the horn. Yeah. I'm like, you know, that's why she's a great player. And that's, you know, she puts the work in and she's going to be a problem too, you know. So South Carolina, for as great as they are defensively, they're going to have a test on their hands when they have this Louisville team in front of them. And they're playing with such fire and intensity. It's just fun to watch. I can't wait for the games, if you can't tell already. But yeah. I think it's going to be a tremendous matchup, just with the defensive minds of Jeff Walls for Louisville and Dawn Staley for South Carolina. But it's going to be who can make the shots they want, right? Who can make the shots that they want to take? Can't settle for taking what the defense is giving you. And I know that's always take what the defense gives you. No, you take what you want from the defense and you make them play you. And I think that's what we're going to see. And that's the chess match that I am really anxious to watch.
No, I think it is a good matchup. The stat line for Emily Engstler is completely wild in this game, though. I want to read out 5 points on 1 of 9 shooting. That's bad, folks. That's not what you want. 3 of 4 from the line, though. Heyo, make your free throws.
Make your free throws, kids.
And 16 rebounds, 2 of them offensive, 4 assists, 6 steals.
Come on.
6 steals and a block. And then only one turnover to go along with those four assists. So yeah, a weird stat line, but it's very Emily Anxler. And I think you're right. Like, it is an interesting matchup because I think the start, if you look at the starting lineups, right?
Right.
So for Louisville, that's going to be Van Lith, Smith, Kiana Smith, Chelsea Hall, Emily Anxler, and Olivia Cochran. Those five versus South Carolina starting five of Destiny Henderson, Zaya Cook. I don't even know who else is going to Beal start. They kind of been running like the three has just been, coming on and off. And then I think we'll see who else is going to start too. But obviously Boston and just like another group of like 6'2" players with extremely long arms will be coming at you.
Yeah.
So I think the matchup is like not terrible. I don't think it's terrible. So yeah, Saxon started. Sorry, that was confusing me. Saxon played a lot against Creighton. I think she'll play a lot again. Lily Grissett's been playing a lot. Just like that group of Saxon, Beal, me here, Grissett, along with Boston, and then Cardoso as well that can come off the bench. Like, it's not a terrible matchup because I think, Cochran, like you mentioned, she's undersized compared to Boston, but she plays up. Emily Anxler, undersized again, and whoever's going to be playing the opposite front court spot to Boston. But again, she can play up and she can bring things. She brings things defensively and offensively that could be a problem for some of those players. Like, she's actually a player that could fit in on South Carolina with all of those long arms and, rangy players. On the wing. So, they could provide some resistance down low. They can be good rebounders, obviously strong rebounders. So I think those two, they match up pretty well. I think the one through three rotation for South Carolina, for Louisville, is going to be a bit of an issue just because, they can match up with Henny. Van Lith, it can match up with Henny. It's just the rest of the rotation is really small compared to their counterparts in South Carolina.
Right.
And you kind of add in the fact that like it's going to be tough for them to really help rebounding. I think they'll be helpful in digs and stuff. So South Carolina tries to post up, but like they like to do, I think it'll be a little bit tougher for them. But I think the rebounding aspect's going to be difficult for those backcourt players to super help with. So they'll need to come up with some creative things. But like I'm saying, like you mentioned, I think it's a pretty good matchup here. I don't see there's not like a huge gaping hole where we just say, well, South Carolina, they can have the size. It like against Creighton, I loved covering Creighton. I really had a great time watching that team play, but it was abundantly clear as soon as you saw the two teams step on the court, well, one team is like 8 inches taller on average. Like, that's not gonna happen against Louisville can stand up to them. And I think, hey, maybe Liz Dixon plays a bigger role. Liz Dixon 6'5", she hasn't played. Her minutes are up and down, and she's had big games this year. She's a senior. She's been in these moments. So I think she may have to come up big, but I'm with you. I think the starting lineup is not a bad matchup. And the other thing I want to mention is Louisville has been excellent at pressing throughout the season, but particularly in this tournament, they've been really good. And South Carolina statistically struggles a lot against the press. I didn't see teams do it that often against, like, North Carolina tried it a bit against South Carolina, but not as much as I thought maybe they could have.
Right.
I think Louisville's going to hit him with it. So those are my things. Like, they're not going to lose the game at the first minute because they're so undersized. And if they can press and do execute that well, I could see it happening. I could see the upset happening.
Yeah. And speaking with Jeff Walls about the press, right? He said in the first two rounds, we brought it out. We haven't pressed a lot all season long, right? But in their first two games in the NCAA tournament, they brought it out and it worked for them. So they said, hey, we're going to try it again just because, and it goes back to what we were saying earlier about trust and success, right? So now he trusts that his team can execute. And at spot moments, he's not going to press the entire game, right? But in spot moments, a made free throw or a made shot, they might, every other made shot, they may do it and bring it out, or every three made shots. So you never know when it's coming, which is going to be difficult for South Carolina because there's no rhyme or reason to it. It's just there sometimes it's not, and it keeps you off balance and on your toes. But I think Jeff Walls has said it, like, it's worked for us, so we're going to try it. Like, I'm sure they're going to bring that out, especially seeing, the difficulties that South Carolina has had against the press. So we'll see what that looks like. If they can get it over that first line of their press, you know, and then they have that relief to the middle and then opposite. I mean, they can break it, but it's going to be quite a test to get it over that front line for Louisville defensively. Right.
I agree. I think it is going to be, I mean, it's going to be tough, but you know, I'm not going to get too ahead of myself. Right. It's South Carolina. And I still, for the record, I still think they're going to win. I don't know. Do you agree? I think we haven't changed our picks.
Generally. No, we haven't changed our picks. And I think, you know, it's going to be a great game. I hope it's another epic, you know, dramatic game like the UConn NC State game. And I think it's going to be something like that. Neither one of these games in the Final Four, by the way, or any of the three games in the Final Four are going to be a blowout. Well, I mean, these teams are at this point of the season for a reason. Okay. They're tough. Okay. And not that the other 60, whatever, four teams aren't. I mean, they were tough enough to get into the tournament. So there's toughness across the board, but there is consistency. There is efficiency. And when you have the toughness to go with those two things, that's why they're at this point and at the pinnacle of making history for their programs. So I think it's going to be a close game between South Carolina and Louisville. I think it's going to be a defensive battle, but it's going to come down to who makes the shots that they want. And I think it's going to be a challenge for both teams to get the shots that they want. And that's why we love watching.
Yeah, no, I will. We'll see. I'm interested in this one. I think it's gonna be good. So just so everyone knows, the line right now, according to ESPN, is South Carolina favored by 8 points. Her hoop stats model, which has been crushing it in the NCAA tournament,
really has
South Carolina as a 6-point favorite. And also has the total points at 123, whereas the over under on the betting markets is 120. So if you're looking for some bets, there may be some good ones. There may be some good ones there. And I think it might be worth your time to look into our Her Hoop stats model, because it has been crushing it if you're a betting folk. So that'd be good. We'll see that game 7 p.m. on ESPN. I'll be in the building in the Target Center. Yeah,
I'll be in the building here at home watching with popcorn and my fuzzy slippers on and just having a blast shouting to the rooftops in here. So that'll be fun.
Let's keep it going. Let's talk about the other game. Yes. Stanford UConn, which will come on right after that at 9:30 p.m. Both these games are on ESPN. And as you mentioned, the ratings are crushing it. I think this one will attract a lot of eyeballs with the defending champs in UConn. On a neutral floor. So the line here, and I'll start with this because I like this now. I should start with it last time. All right. The line for Stanford is they are favored by 1 point according to the betting market. And then the over under is 128.5. According to our model, Stanford should win this game by 2 points. And the total points will be around 126. So our model suggests betting Stanford minus a plus one. No, wait. Yeah, Stanford minus one. And then the under in that one. But the matchup's amazing. I mean, the matchup's amazing. You know, guess who's leading this tournament in scoring among players that are still playing?
Oh, man. Aaliyah Boston? No, wait. Haley?
No.
Joan? No. It is. Hey, wait, tell me. Who is it?
Do you want me to tell you?
Okay.
It is Lexi Hall. She has 22 points a game.
Oh.
Right?
Wow.
I saw that. I was like, no way. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys. I did look this up on CBB Analytics. So I may have done something wrong, but they're telling me that that she's in fact leading the tournament and scoring among players are still around. She's been phenomenal and she's been open. Also, those two things help. She had 13 in the first round, 36
right
in the second, 19 right against Maryland, and 20 against Texas. So she leads the tournament in scoring. Cameron Brink has been amazing, 4.3 blocks a game. Let me say that again, 4.3 blocks a game.
Dang.
Six against Texas. you know, Haley Jones is doing Haley Jones thing. They're just cruising along. I think Texas gave them all they could handle, but Texas is a really good team. And they won by 9 points, and you know, they were cruising against Maryland for a long time until the end of that game, and Maryland fought back.
Yes.
So Stanford looks good. So I don't know. I guess the question is, did UConn's win over NC State change our mind? Because we picked Stanford to head to the national championship game in the courtside bracket.
I don't think so. Okay. I mean, I know that they played great, and they're getting, you know, contributions across the board. You know, Kristen Williams, I know, is the X factor, like I always like to call her. Mm-hmm. But I think when you have a team like Stanford who has won it already last year with, in essence, the same group of players, I mean, minus two, but I mean, you have your foundation and your core back.
Yeah.
And you have Tar Vanderveer over there. I mean, I don't know. What a story for her. We're talking about Coach K writing his story and leaving his legacy. What about Tar Vanderveer what she's been able to do and what she's on the precipice of doing again?
Did you see the graphic? I don't know if this was in your game. I don't remember where this came up, but like the three most winning coaches in college basketball history are all in the tournament with Tara, Coach K, and Gino.
Yeah.
All in the tournament. So it was just really cool. Sorry, I wanted to bring that up before.
No, I love it. But you know, you have to give credit where credit is due. And I think it's definitely due for Tara Vanderveer and what she's been able to do and to withstand that push that Maryland gave them at the end of that game in particular. I think just shows that level of experience and fortitude. And you know, you can't really quantify what experience does for you at this point of the season. And I know when Maryland won in 06, they had freshmen and sophomores on the floor. So, I mean,
heck of a group of freshmen and sophomores for that team.
They were not bad. It's not like a, you know, cut and dry discussion I'm trying to have, but I'm saying for the most part, when you have teams who have that consistency of experience and they've tasted success, we're talking success and trust, and I love that. But I think there's a lot of trust that goes into it because of what you've been able to do together. And I think that's what Stanford brings forward to this game. 13 consecutive Final Fours for Gino. And I think, what was their last championship in 2016? If I'm not mistaken, I believe that's right.
What a drought for UConn that they haven't won a championship every single season.
No,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to UConn fans. I'm gonna look at it. I don't remember.
I believe it's 2016.
Yeah, 2016. Yeah, what a tremendous drought.
But 13 consecutive. Right? 13 consecutive Final Fours.
14
now. Okay, yeah, 14. So 14 consecutive Final Fours, and their last one was in 2016. For Louisville, I know they haven't been back to the Final Four since 2018, right? Mm-hmm. So for this group of players, it's their first time. But these coaches have been battle tested. They've all been there. So that's one thing, okay? But the players coming to that position, you know, to be in the Final Four, it's new for them. Yeah. You know, it's new for them. And to do what it takes to win, I think is going to be quite a challenge. And to have all those basketball minds, like I was in huddles, you know, watching whiteboards and not that I'm in there to report on strategy. Yeah. I'm there to report on the emotions and, you know, the things coming out of it leadership wise and focal points. But I mean, for me as a coach and former player to see the whiteboard and those discussions, I was in my happy place.
It's candy,
and I'm just like, and I'm not going to report on, hey, they're running whatever play, but I'm looking at it personally as, you know, a learning experience. I'm like, wow, this is like a free basketball clinic for me. I'm in these huddles with these basketball savants, you know, and I get to really watch and learn. And then to see it unfold on the floor, like Jeff Walls in particular, just drew up this play, right? And I was just over the shoulder of a player watching, you know, and watching how what he was looking for to get executed. Boy, they ran it to perfection. Missed the shot, but they ran it to perfection. Like everybody did what they were supposed to do. It was exactly what he had you know, on the whiteboard, right? And I don't even think I had a report coming out of that one. But I just think, you know, to see it unfold like that, it's just really a lot of fun. And to see it executed, I think, is another thing. So all five players, there was no breakdown. There was no player like, which way do I go on this one? Or where am I supposed to go? It was like, boom, boom, boom. So that's what they need right now. All four teams need that level of focus, right? And execution. And, you know, to have these coaches running it, man, how fun is that? How fun is that? Like, just to see, you know, them at their best, right? Wanting their players to be at their best as well.
No, it is Candyland. Just like being able, like when we were in College Park, we got to stay for like the entire practices because I was hanging out with Christy, and Christy's on TV. So I was like, hey, I'm also here. Like, don't worry about me. And just like watching all the coaches like go through their sets and talk about the other team's sets. And oh man, it was Candyland. I was having an incredible time. But so yeah, just like watching, and the basketball this tournament has been amazing. I think that kind of goes without saying. But just like the X's and O's stuff has been fantastic. We're going to set our back to Stanford and UConn. Because I think one of the X's and O's things here is like Stanford obviously loves to run a lot of Princeton sets. You know, they love to chin you to death. They really have a ton of stuff that they can throw at you. But, you know, UConn also kind of does a lot of that. UConn runs a lot of chin actions, a lot of Princeton actions, a lot of screen to screener stuff. So, they're going to be a little bit more ready, I think, than some of the other teams that Stanford has played in playing this kind of complex system. You know, I don't think it's going to be quite as much of a foreign language when they're preparing. And I think that's it's a really big step up from other teams that just, you know, there's not a ton of teams that run this like high level of Princeton style offense that I think Stanford's really known for, and I think UConn's gonna be ready for it on that side. That being said, I mean, it's just tough unless Paige Beckers is supernova as she was, so it's not impossible.
She was.
I think Stanford just has the advantage in pretty much every category in terms of, like you're saying, you know, knowledge of each other. You know, this team just been playing a lot more together this year because then UConn had injuries. So it's just like, there's still, you could tell up until like the second overtime, like UConn was still trying to get back into it. Same with Paige, like Paige was trying to get back into the game. So I think Stanford just has an experience advantage in terms of this year of playing. I think they have, you know, the size advantage. I think they have a lot of matchups that are going to mess with, UConn, and I think they're just playing like a little bit better at the moment. They're just executing stuff a little bit better at the moment than UConn. I think they'll come out on top.
Yeah, I just think, you know, and not only has UConn battled injuries throughout the season, but now Dorca Juhas is out.
Yeah, that's huge.
And I think that's really going to impact them as well. I mean, she's 6'4", 6'5", stretch the floor and knock in timely threes. And loosen things up inside with Edwards and Adota. I think that's going to be a difference. And, you know, to make that adjustment with just a couple of days to work on that and practice, et cetera, that's going to be something to watch for as well, to see how disruptive her absence on the floor is for UConn. But yeah, I mean, obviously they have the pieces and they know when they're challenged, they have players who can step up, right? And we've seen that throughout the season as well. And Kristen Williams, I mean, I'm just going to go back to her. I think she's going to be the one who tilts the scale in terms of the overall team success for UConn, especially in the absence of Dorca Juhas. We know what Paige Beckers is able to do. We know what AZ Fudd has done and what she is able to do. But when it comes down to it, hey, man, you know, you've got to really make some adjustments on the fly. You can't, again, account for injuries, especially at this point in the season. Like, you're ready to go in with all your chess pieces in the box, and now you're missing Dorca Juhas, who has been, you know, a pivotal piece for them. So I think it's going to be quite a challenge, but I think Gino Arias is built for that. He's seen that before. I remember Abrosimova got hurt, you know, down in the NCAA tournament years back. You know, I just think he's seen it and done it before. He knows how to prepare his team for absences of injured players. So, I mean, I think that's definitely something to look for, especially at the beginning of the game. How is their rhythm different? without Dorka Juhas on the court. So I think that's going to be interesting to look for.
You know what else is interesting is like the Spider-Man meme with the two Spider-Mans pointing back and forth at each other between Olivia Nelson Adota and Cameron Brink. Like just two players who have all the tools in the world.
Yeah.
And and Cameron's been incredible in this tournament. Yeah. Absolutely stunning. Like the passing, the shooting, like everything. She's a unicorn. I think we're going to be talking about her next year as like a generational talent. But just like those two who love to foul. Those two players love to foul. And like, frankly, Olivia Nelson Adota got away with like between 6 and 8 fouls against NC State. And that happens, but she it's going to be really funny to see which one of them gets in foul trouble first, because I guarantee you one of them will be in foul trouble. I can guarantee it without a shade of
And Ellie, I think that hurts UConn more, though,
It hurts UConn
more. Without Dorka on the floor. So, smart. And you know,
the other player that needs to step up, and we've said this all year, is Avina Westbrook. I mean, like, look, if there's a time to do it, Avina, now is the time. Right. Now is the time, because I don't think you can really count on it at this point. But if you're going to have a big offensive game, now is the time, Avina. So we'll see if she can step up. I think Aaliyah Edwards played nicely, too. So UConn has a chance. Who do you think UConn has a better chance than Louisville, right?
I think that's such a tell, you know, me, I'm going through when you ask me questions, I have like 10 wheels spinning because there's so many factors for me that have to go right. I think I think Louisville is going to surprise some people with their energy on the defensive end. And if they can turn that into points off turnovers, which they did against Michigan, I think that could be a difference maker that we're not really talking about. So I'm not ready to count Louisville out. I can't because my eyeballs on them. I have my eyeballs on them. I don't know. That's going to be tough. I know for UConn, I think the challenge is going to be what they look like without one of their rotational players to rotate to with Juhas. But I think, I mean, you already said the numbers, you know. So +8 for South Carolina and +2 for Stanford. So I think, I think that tells the story right there statistically with everything all calculated through. But the eyeball test for me, you know, I think both games are going to be 2-point games or 1-point games or buzzer beater situations. I think both games are going to be close and tight. Or free throws. And we're talking about that. So I don't know if I answered your question, but I think UConn has a better chance, but I can't say that 1,000% because of Louisville's energy on defense. They're fighters, man. Like they don't quit. And Haley Van Lith, like, oh my God, the video or the viral video now that's all over the place with her Mamba mentality, you know. But there was a piece, it was on the ACC network about Haley Van Lith and her dad going to an elementary school to work out and how they would battle each other. And they would go at all hours of the night in the school. And he was super physical with her. And he said it, you know, he said, you know, sometimes she didn't want to go. I was like, we're going. And that's just the investment of a great girl dad, right? Yeah. To be able to sacrifice and do it. Maybe he didn't want to. I mean, he's driving all around and traveling all over the place, you know, 9-10 hours a day, and then going in the gym with her 4 or 5 hours every night. And that's why she's at the elite level that she is, because of that investment and work ethic that he presented to her. But for Kobe Bryant to want to work out with Haley Van Lith, and cool. For Gigi to see it, right? For Gigi to see it, and for him to go to her game 2 weeks before, unfortunately, they tragically passed away. I watched that video the day of the game, and I think that's why that was on my spirit to ask her, like, what would that little girl say to you, you know, that worked out in the gym with her dad, like in the dusty elementary school gym for hours and hours? And what would she say to you in this moment? Like, it took you that kind of effort to get you here kind of situation. And then, you know, with asking her about Kobe, I just think that his name needs to remain in the women's game, because Gigi, rest her soul, my gosh, would be a high school sophomore or junior right now. And it's just, it's so tragic. But I think his imprint is still on the game of basketball in general. But I think, especially 100%. On the women's side, because of the relationships that he built with players like Haley Van Lith. And, you know, maybe people didn't know that story, but they do now. I mean, Sports Illustrated, all these people are like talking about it. So I'm like, well, I think that's just another way to keep Kobe Bryant and Gigi Bryant and their legacies in front of us. I know Vanessa Bryant, I know she had it on her story, you know, the clip of Haley Van List saying what Kobe would say, and he would definitely say something like that to her, I'm sure. But it was just, I don't know, it was just, for me, it was special because, you know, I think that he needs to, you know, that's just another great way to keep the Mamba mentality flowing through our women's game. So,
oh, I love it. I need the shirt. Go bleep and win this bleep from Haley Van List. Love it.
I can't believe I was standing there and she said, and then I was like, okay, thank you so much. Thanks. I was like, okay.
That's also like, I was waiting for her to answer. I was like, I mean, this has to include a curse word if it's Kobe. It's like, that's what he did. Yeah. He was that type of guy. So, I love that answer. And I think it's a great moment. Very clippable moment. I don't know if it's going to make one shining moment. Just because if it's content,
yeah, if it's just video, no audio, maybe, yeah.
But it'll be an R one shining moment as a collective society of basketball fans. It'll be a my one shining moment.
And mine, for sure.
But yeah, those are our two Final Four games. I don't think it makes sense too much to talk too much about the final yet. We can rip a pod on in the off day. We'll see if we can. We'll see if we can get that done to talk more about the final. But I mean, we both have. Do you think just like one? We're just gonna pick it. We're gonna pick it right now because we both picked South Carolina and Stanford to make it.
Okay.
I'm still picking Stanford. I'm sticking with our bracket because I want it.
Okay, I like that, but I just think there's going to be the redo factor for South Carolina. Sure. And I know we picked, you know, Stanford like collectively as a team, Gabe, but I keep picturing Aaliyah Boston's face when she missed that shot, dude. And I just think that is going to take her to another level in that game, and she's going to play an amazing game and just put it behind her and leave that as her legacy and not that missed shot as her legacy in the Final Four and her attempt to get a title. I just think she's got it in her to prove herself right. And it's not about proving anyone wrong. It's about proving yourself right at this point. And I think Aaliyah Boston has that quality in her. And I think that's what's going to get Stanford and a loss in the championship game.
We'll see. I mean, honestly, I'll be happy for all four of these teams. Even you, UConn, I will be happy for you guys if you win the championship because I really like the way the team plays and they care about each other. And that's all I'm in it for. I just want to see teams that care about each other do well. And I'll be happy for all four of these teams. And I think they should be very proud of making it there. But, you know, I think Stanford, South Carolina is going to be amazing. And I agree. I mean, South Carolina has been incredible. Stanford's been incredible. So I'm really glad to see that we still have the hope for that. We'll see what happens before the title game. All right. I did want to bring up some other things because we'll probably have to talk about these on a future courtside episode. So 88 players opted into the WNBA draft ahead of the Final Four.
Saw that.
That's a lot of players.
I mean, not a lot of spots.
Yeah, there's like, I mean, I don't remember how many I counted, but it's like almost, it's around 20 spots that are really available for draftees. So.
Wow. Tough. We'll see. But I got my, you know, I'm ready. You know,
oh, I'm ready
for the draft, April 11th. And that's going to be fun. But, you know, I just hope that, you know, there's a safety net for a lot of those kids, because obviously those numbers, 88 of them, that, you know, not everyone's going to land on a team.
Well, and I think, you know, put your name in the draft if you're graduating. If not, you can always play in Europe, or you can get a day job. Like, hey, the basketball, it should be available to you. So the Elite Eight players have an extra 48 hours, I believe. So I think, I don't know when that runs out or when that started, to be honest. But it'll be sometime this week, the Elite Eight players have to announce. Nas Holman's already announced, just in case you guys were wondering. Yeah. Final Four players have until the same time frame, 48 hours after the championship game, to opt in. We assume that we know who's doing that from these four teams. The other thing, I don't know if you caught it, Lexi Brown was traded to the Sparks earlier today.
Oh my goodness, I missed that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, she's gonna have to fight for a spot with Aurelio Griantas and Taya Cooper, I believe. We'll see what happens, right? Yeah. But I think that's a great pickup for them because they kind of need a nice vet guard there.
And they did a good job in that. She did a good job in the UA.
Yeah, yeah. AU.
Or the AU. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
My son is on the UA circuit. Greg, AU, I know. And I'm still recovering from flying back. I'm overtired. So yeah. Yeah. AU. She did a great job in the AU.
I knew that was the mix up.
Go ahead, Lexi.
So, shouts to Lexi Brown getting to LA. I think she'll have some playing time there. Hopefully. And then the other thing, just like as a general concept, we cannot get into this because there's way too much stuff to talk about. The coaching carousel and the transfer portal are out of control. Out of control. It's crazy. It's too much to keep up with. I have no idea what's happening.
We need a whole pod for that too. So
I just found out. I was like looking at the women's college tracker. From my guy Raul at WBB blog. That's great. Right. I just found out that my law school alma mater, William & Mary, has a coaching opening. They're going to have a new coach. I did not know that. I literally just found that out.
Yeah, Ed Swanson was out down there. So great
and
guy.
Ed's a great guy. Yeah, I was about to say.
Great guy, man.
Yeah. He did pretty well. I mean, he did pretty well. But he's on his way out. And just like disorienting. Disorienting to see all the changes and then the transfer portal tool.
Yeah, you said the transfer portal. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was just saying the transfer portal and the coaching carousel have just been crazy. So we'll have to do a whole thing.
Yeah, just with William & Mary real quick, one of our players from South Lakes, Abby Rendell, graduated from William & Mary a couple years ago. And, so the recruiting process and all that with Ed was great. And they also offered Bree, to play down there. So the recruiting process with her. So, I mean, you hate to see people go, especially the coaches like that you know and have had relationships with. But, there's a spot for him somewhere because he's a great coach, and a great person too. So
just like it was like literally like I was scrolling down the list. I was like, William & Mary, like we have and Natasha Adair, we saw her and we were talking about how we were really excited about Delaware and now she's in Arizona State. Good for her. Joni Taylor is going to A&M. So that's a whole, like you mentioned, that's a whole different podcast. So
we got to do a whole one. Felicia going back to Syracuse. I love it. So I love her. That's my girl. I'm so glad she got that job. Yeah, no, Brooke Weisbrod down
FSU.
FSU, yeah.
No, it is. We need a whole thing because Virginia has a new coach. So we'll get into all that at a different point after the Final Four.
Broadcaster. Anyway, but go ahead.
So because we have the Final Four this weekend, which is fantastic. Then we have the WNBA draft the following weekend, which is fantastic. However, Gabe, I don't know if Gabe's going to make it because he has been to like four straight days of basketball at College Park, went to Greensboro, heading to Minnesota, going to head up to New York for the draft. So mid-April, you guys should send me some chocolate. I'll need
Yeah, that's what we're gonna do our dinner in that little part right in between college and WNBA. We're gonna do a dinner, you and Em and
Christy and I are gonna be asleep.
I know.
Jerome and Emily could talk. You guys hang out.
You guys talk amongst yourselves. We're taking a nap.
That's all I got, Christy.
Oh my gosh. Well, I can't wait for these games, Gabe. They're cutting the lights on us here, courtside. So we got to get up out of here this time, but make sure you guys watch these games. Please. Make sure you guys get your friends to watch these games because, our young girls need this representation on this grand stage of the Final Four. So I'm just putting that out there. And you learn so much. And it's not just X's and O's that you learn about. Like you said, Gabe, these players and coaches, they care about one another. They want this experience for one another and they're going to compete at a really, really high level. And that's the beauty of sports and, drag people and get them to watch. I think, a lot of people have put their eyes on our game and I think it's going to be even more so for the Final Four and beyond. So for this edition of Courtside with Christy and Gabe, we're going to cut it off, but we're going to bring you all of what you need to know coming up possibly on an in-between pod, in between the two games and the championship game coming up soon right here on Her Hoop Stats and the podcast network that we have here. But I'm Christy Winter Scott for Gabe Ibrahim. Thank you guys so much for joining us, and we will see you next time.